This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 585, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I walk through this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity. I ask myself, is all hope lost?
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 585, and also marking our first episode of 2017 where we can officially say it's hot out there, folks.
I'm Ron Richards.
It's so hot. Oh, God. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm alongside my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
You guys are right. It's like upper 70s. It's like kind of kissing over to 80 degrees.
It was literally 98 degrees in the car right before the show as I was driving over. I'm like, oh, I'll go to my sister's where there's air conditioning, and they haven't turned theirs on yet.
Actually, it's cooled off up here, so it's lovely.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Oh, God damn it. Anyway, we are from the world of iFanboy, where every week we read a stack of comics, and then one of us picks our favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and we talk about that book. We talk about some other books. We talk about books you want us to talk about. We talk about comic book ephemera, whatever might be on our mind. And we'll take some time to hear from you, the listener. It's a collaborative, fun environment and a safe space. But be warned, spoiler warning, if you haven't read your books, we're going to talk about what happens in them, so it will be an unsafe space. So if you're worried about that, press pause, come back after you read your books. This week, Josh had the pick. Mr. Flanagan, take it away.
Hello. I did have the pick. Thank goodness, because otherwise that would have been, you know, the whole plan would
have
been
wrong. No one would have prepared, yeah.
But as it turns out, I did read the comic books, and I made a pick, and I'm prepared to talk about Batman number 23.
Turns out. Sorry.
turning into regular collaborators, Tom King and Mitch Garrett's returning to this character after having done a really fun two-issue Catwoman story a handful of issues back. I want to say 16, 17, yep. Something like that.
Yep.
And what we have here is, I mean, what is basically a one-shot?
Totally is, yeah.
With, well, it's, you know, I was prepared to say that, and then I looked at the beginning, it said chapter 3, and I was like, what?
I will say I was very, very confused, and we'll talk about it later on, but I opened this up expecting to get the wonderful conclusion to the button, and I was like, where's the button?
The Flash!
Where's the button? No, I know, but I didn't realize that the Flash had ended. I thought there'd be more button here, so
I actually forgot about the button, as I'm wont to do. We were going to get to that.
When I open the first page and we have the sort of retro type setting, I thought I was losing my vision because everything was getting blurry because the effect of like under the mold, so the Brave and the Mold. Yeah. And from the angle I'm looking at the iPad, like, oh my God, is my vision that bad? Like, so screw you, Clayton Cowley.
They did it though. So yeah, it's a sort of one issue story, and Swamp Thing shows up to talk to Batman, and it's a daddy story is really what it is. And it's also, so it's kind of like heavy and grim, but then there's also serious stuff. I mean, not serious stuff. There's Kite Man in here. There's just Alfred being disgusted by the filthiness of Swamp Thing at the house. There's this ridiculous Lloyd McGuinn, Dreadnoughtish-like character. and at the end of it, I just thought that was just a great one-issue, one-shot Batman story. And the thing I keep thinking is, why are they letting them do this? Because it's very out of touch with everything else DC is doing.
Yeah, it's a murder mystery one
totally,
shot.
I suppose.
Totally, sure. But this is Tom King's thing, right?
He's allowed to work in his own voice, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, and I think these two guys bring the best out of each other. Those two Catwomans were previously the best issues that they'd done, that Tom King had done so far on Batman. This was terrific. It's always fun to put Batman with a character that is so outside of his comfort zone. Not that he's uncomfortable, but it's just, you know, there's an extended scene with Swamp Thing having tea with Bruce Wayne in the manor.
That was really good.
And it's weird. And Alfred, yeah. You're right, is pissed off. He's got to constantly clean up behind the Swamp Thing. But that's what's fun, is that you get to see Batman having, or Bruce having tea with Swamp Thing in his house, and it's unusual. Also, I'd like to point out that the painting on the above them of the Bat family, which was referenced a while back in another story, one of the kids is missing. So who got screwed here? So that's clearly Dick and Damian, and that's, I assume, that could be, it's either Tim or Jason, but one of those two didn't make the portrait. I just assume it's Tim because he's getting screwed by DC.
I was gonna assume it's Jason because he's a son of a bitch.
Anyway, and that's Matt Anthony Wayne on the right. Anyway, continue.
Yeah.
Now I'm just fascinated by that. That shot, by the way, there's a lot of great shots in here. And I know, like, it's almost seems throwback. Ace the Bat Hound is there. It seems throwbacky that, you know, Alfred is literally wearing an apron and cleaning. Like, he has
that all the time.
I know, but I feel like he's moved up the ladder. I guess there's nobody else there, so he'd have to. Anyway.
Who do you think cleans the house?
That's what
makes him so great. He mends the clothes, he stitches the wounds, he cooks the food, he dusts, like, he does it all, man.
When does he sleep?
He doesn't.
He's got the Peter Parker thing going on there.
Look at Bruce's sweet white pants, though.
Yeah. I mean, he still does the sort of dilettante outfit, even though nobody's...
This is summer Bruce.
That's true. Linen pants.
This is like Hampton's Bruce. Mm-hmm. I love this. I love everything about it.
And so there's a basically the other thing that happens is there's a turn that goes on later where here's your spoiler that we warn you about. They find the killer.
So Swamp Thing's father was killed goes to Batman for help. Batman, of course, sees a kindred spirit in that his father was killed, his parents were killed, so wants to help him.
Yeah.
Go for it.
And then Swamp Thing kills the hell out of him.
Yeah, it was brutal.
It was. And then Batman gets real mad, and it's like, stalemate, here we are.
And then it just kind of ends, and that's really why, like, so here's the thing, like, I didn't love this. I thought there were moments in it that were really, really good. It's clear that King and Jared work well together, and I thought a lot of the panel layouts and stuff like that were like, all right, cool, I'm vibing on this, and there's a lot of cool kind of, like, Batman lore mentions. But I don't know if it's because of the shorter issue length or trying to cram more into whatever, but I found this ending immensely unsatisfying.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, I thought so, like, Swamp Thing kills him, Batman's like, what did you do? You used me. And Swamp Thing's like, yep, bye. And then it's over. And
yeah, like, that's what Swamp Thing does. That's how he it's the same way he appeared. He just disappears. That's what Swamp Thing does.
It was just really unsatisfying. I mean, it was much like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I thought it was well executed. I just found the end result to be unsatisfying as a reader. Yeah.
But like the conundrum for Batman is that he's the guy who controls everything and you know, has ultimate authority on it, and he has no power here.
Yeah.
And that's his... I loved it. I thought it was a wonderful short story, and I was remembering that Tom King wrote one of the best short stories that I ever read, one of those Vertigo anthologies about, you know, time traveling to kill Hitler with Tom Fowler. And I love that, like, this is a talent of his. For me, the long, drawn-out stories, they're fine. But to get, like, this little sort of, you know, amuse-bouche sort of in-between stuff is really great.
It's harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's way harder to do all this. I mean, this is for me, I thought this was a very satisfying, you know, 20-page story. And it's hard. You know, the fewer pages there are, the harder it is to do.
And dramatically, what else are you going to do
after
that? Like, what's the next beat? There's nothing of consequence, so.
Yeah, it just seemed, I mean, it was very sudden. It was kind of way out there, but I don't know. I just found it satisfying. That's just me, though, so.
Batman, you know, literally yelled at a pile of dead leaves.
Yeah, I know. That's why, yeah. So,
that's the twist. It's his,
It's his impotence. Yes,
that was the word I was looking for.
The, what's not unsatisfying is the badass Batmobile that Mitch Gerrits draws, which is
that
a throwback.
That was very cool.
Yep. Throwback to the giant Bathead, and always my favorite Batmobile was the giant Bathead Batmobile, and this one is like sort of a mix of the Tumbler with the original Batmobile, and I love it.
That is a not aerodynamic vehicle.
No.
That is for going through a wall.
That is terrible gas mileage.
Listen.
But this is...
he saves more fuel by his good works.
So this is the team that's moving on that they announced to Mr. Miracle, a miniseries, and I'm very excited about that now because they really do work well together. Mm-hmm. You know, we love the Sheriff of Babylon. They've done really great short story work in Batman. They love this 9-panel grid layout, and it really does play to both of their strengths. Even though Gerrits didn't do Vision, it feels very Vision-y when they work together.
Yeah, and I think that when I first heard Mr. Miracle, I thought, I don't really know that I know that much about that character or care one way or another. But then I thought of the Vision, and I was like, oh, man, that guy, they've got it. Like, it's gonna be maudlin and weird and interesting and cool to look at. And, you know, you've got all that fourth world weirdness to play with.
I love Mr. Miracle.
Yeah. It's just, I don't have a ton of history with him.
I know. It was a Justice League, you know, Giffen to Matthias character. And, you know, obviously he's a Kirby character and I love the New Gods. So I'm looking forward to it.
I love that character. I love that character design. There's that whole section of New Gods.
Character design's awesome.
Yeah, I like amazing. That, yeah. I like that it's clearly a mask though. Like you can see the outlines of his eyes, you know, like it's not, he doesn't look like the Vision who's got like a red face or something. It's neat. Anyway,
we'll talk about that when it comes
out. We'll get to that. Sorry. Yeah. I got all excited. I was just like this was hands down the only book that I considered. You know, like that was just a great single issue, tailor-made for pick of the week format.
I enjoyed it. I have no problem with it.
Yep. Excellent. Yeah, no. I thought it was well executed. I just found it unsatisfying. That's all. So,
I find that I kind of don't care about Secret Empire, but I'm kind of enjoying reading it.
That's the key to enjoy. That's like letting go.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, the problem is around the line is that it seems that some books are doing it and some books are not, and I find that to be problematic. I wish none of them were doing it. They just let them tell their story. But yep.
It's totally ruined the Ultimates this week.
Yes, yeah, agreed. I'm sure. Totally agree. Well, I don't know. I don't know what ruined the Ultimates more, the insertion of the event or that art.
Well, we're not talking about
this. But let us discuss. Yeah. Let's discuss this art, which was Andrea Sorrentino, who, you know, we were talking about. Like, he's not a superstar, but he's a real good artist. Yeah. I really like when he shows up. He brings his own flavor to everything. It looks, you know, it doesn't look like anybody else. Well, it does look like other things, but it's his version of it.
So, what were the meetings about this week?
Well, there was a meeting between Zemo and Captain America.
Yep.
And then the Avengers did space. I mean, there were impromptu meetings. There were kind of stand-ups in the hangar.
And so, like, walker talks.
Yeah. And then Clint and Natasha took something offline. And then Spider-Man sort of ransacked Black Widow for a meeting at the coffee shop, which he didn't expect. Then they brought in the Young Avengers or the Champions for some intro.
So what is happening in this story?
Aside from it being just ridiculous,
that's why I think I like it.
Yeah, exactly. So what has happened is now to quell the uprisings that are going on. Steve and Hydra begrudgingly destroyed Vegas to kind of show that any sort of active rebellion will be swept away. So they destroyed the entire city, and now all the heroes are freaking out because they don't know what to do. And
because where are they going to go for adult proms and stuff? Like, where are they going to have their guys' weekends?
And so, meanwhile,
Reno. Fuck Reno.
Meanwhile, VR Tony Stark has figured out. Well, no, here's my problem with this issue is that this whole issue hinges on a ridiculous, very convenient data dump from Rick Jones before he died.
They set it up.
They set it up, yeah. So Rick Jones was killed in the first issue. That was a big thing. But right before he got executed, he was able to sneak away a secret message to the heroes to let them find that he went into Hydra's files, and he found out that it's all because of the Cosmic Cube and basically explained everything that happened up to this point and that why Steve is acting the way he's acting. And so VR Tony Stark wanted to, and Hawkeye wanted to organize a team to go try to find the fragments of the Cosmic Cube to put Steve back to where he is. And Black Widow wanted none of it. She just wants to go take him out. You know, saying that if the Steve they knew was aware of what he was doing, he'd say to take me out. And so the heroes are split. And then Hydra Steve Rogers sends Zemo out to go find the Cosmic Cube. It's all hinges on the Cosmic Cube. And then ultimately at the end of the issue, we get revealed that there's another Steve Rogers who's silver haired and bearded, and he's just trying to get home.
He's not silver haired. He's blonde. It's just
blondish, but looks older. He looks older.
This has the Secret Avengers problem of too many blonde dudes.
Yeah, true.
So are you telling me that Steve Rogers isn't actually a Nazi? Is that what's happening?
Listen, Hydra's
Hydra is not Nazis.
So are you telling me that the most important character in the most important movie franchise in the world is not a Nazi?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Are you telling me that Dr. Octopus wasn't Spider-Man forever?
He's a Cosmic Cube clone.
Oh, boy.
We don't know that for sure, but like the fact.
Of course he is.
Just
of course he is. I'm annoyed by everybody.
So just listening to Ron explain that Roy Thomasian sort of sprawling.
I like it.
True. Yeah.
That part was fun. And maybe the difference between when he does that with X-Men and this is that I know all the characters and the stakes in this. And as long as it doesn't stick around too long and mess with too many other things, I can totally roll with this. I'm fine. What I like is the general unease among the good guys, I guess, about, like, this isn't right. Like, something's not right. Like, that sort of acknowledgement of, like, we know it's weird. We're playing a game here. We're doing a story.
So now the only thing that gets me about it is that having this convenient data dump from Rick Jones, like I would have rather had somebody discover it on their own somehow.
I like that it's out of the way.
Yeah, but it's a major, or at least have that be in the first issue or what. I don't know.
He's like a Bothan spy who gave his life for the
Nathan Hale, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately the thing that I'm enjoying it too. I think it's wacky. I just want to go with the ride. What annoys me is I guess they're gonna have a different artist every issue, and that completely just screws me up. Like that loses any sort of vibe or flow to the story. You know, the first issue, you know, the zero issue, which was really the first issue, was Acuna. The first issue, which is really the second issue, was McNiven. The second issue, which is really the third issue, was Sorrentino. You know, like I want to have a cohesive, you know, look and feel to this story. And I feel it's too kind of jerky by having such a dramatic art shift between Acuna to McNiven to Sorrentino.
Or do you want it to come out?
Well, no, I want it to come out, but that's just production. That's just, you know,
all the artists are good.
But that's the modern day trade-off, is that if you want these top line guys, they're not going to come out on a monthly basis.
Yeah,
that's just to me the weird thing is that when you do something like this and it's that important, maybe you know it should take over the whole line. I know everyone complains about that too, but like if I'm reading books and nothing is, you know, the things you're talking about aren't even reflected in them unless they are really done really badly in the Ultimates 2 this week, but it's just bizarre reading other Marvel books and have it just become completely normal going on while this is happening.
Yeah. It's tough, and it's a tough road to hoe. I understand that. But that said, Sorrentino's art was great. The two-page spread of Rick explaining the whole thing with panels from previous comics, that could be a poster. That was an amazing double-page spread.
Yep.
It is what it is.
I mean, like it's not great, but it's fun,
right? It's stupid, and that's what it's supposed to be.
And I'm fine with that. I don't expect any more out of it. Superman 23 had a reveal. To those of you who are familiar with Action Comics number 775, it might mean something. I think that might be a specific audience. Connor, did Manchester Black show up at another time?
Yeah, I think he has, but I rolled my eyes anyway.
Did you?
Yeah. The best thing with this issue was the variant cover by Jorge Jimenez, which is fantastic. But
I'm looking for that. Because the one that was on it, the regular one, was pretty good too, I thought.
Yeah, two great covers. The cover was really great. The Powerless cover, and then you flip past Flash, and there's only him in his cover. Anyway, yeah, so that, you know, the weird dairy farmer next door who has kidnapped Bruce Wayne and Damian Wayne and Jonathan Kent, we still don't know what he is exactly, but we have the reveal was that Manchester Black, the character who was created solely to make fun of the trend of authority-like characters in a certain time and place, is revealed to be the one holding Jonathan Kent. And it's just like, that character served a very specific purpose. It was to show why Superman was still relevant in the time when that comic came out, that characters like those in the Authority were super popular, and Superman seemed passé. That character doesn't exist to continue on. He was a cipher. So the fact that he's still around is kind of besides the point of him.
But that's like that recycling of concepts and sort of things that you have laying around is very true to form.
I get it, but it was very specifically done for a reason.
So you didn't like that. I mean, obviously.
I didn't like that he came back. I liked it originally, obviously, one of the best.
No, I know that. I get it. So I mean, this issue.
I didn't like the reveal, no.
Okay, it was unexpected. I'll give him that. And I mean, I think that the thing that I think
I thought
it was
going to be Constantine.
Yeah, no, that would have been horrible.
I know, but that's what I thought. I mean, you know, it was a British smoking guy with a jacket on, so I thought it was going to be Constantine.
Yeah, that's the red herring. I think that I feel like we have been talking about Superman more regularly than any time in our history.
I'm sure Ron can confirm that.
Yes.
That's something.
Yeah.
Like, we tried during the last iteration with the beard. We tried, but it was always like, it's all right. It's pretty good. I think Greg Pak did a bunch of it. But this run, which I'm not going to tell you is like the greatest Superman run I've ever, but it's intriguing.
It's solid.
And it's fun to talk about.
Yeah. This book is better. Even though, this book is better than Action Comics. I mean, I like them both, but this one is I think the more superior one. It's got better art. Mm-hmm. Doug Monkey's on art.
It does have great art.
Tomas and Gleason have a good handle on the Superman Jonathan thing. Even though, you know, they're still living on the farm here, where in Action Comics they bought that duplex in Midtown Metropolis in Action Comics. I'm still thinking about, but
it hasn't moved off the market yet.
It's fun. It's fun.
I think it's funny that Tomasi is working with Gleason, who's you know, mostly known as an artist, and they're co-writing. And then down in the inkers is Champagne, who Tomasi co-wrote what was the name of that forever ago.
The Mighty?
Yeah, Mighty with Somni on
the
art.
Mighty?
Yeah, and
was
Snape
it the Mighty?
On art.
Yeah, it was the Mighty. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
So Tomasi will come along and take guys who are not full-time writers and do fun things with them as a co-writer. That's his movie.
It's a good book.
Yep.
It's a good book.
It's fun.
So I wasn't going to read Luke Cage number one because I was annoyed about Power Man and Iron Fist being canceled, but I figured I'm reading Iron Fist, I'm reading Jessica Jones, I'm reading Daredevil, I might as well read Luke Cage. Plus, David F. Walker's still writing it, and I think he's immensely talented and has a really great voice for Luke Cage. So I read it, and man, the art really dragged this book down really, really badly.
Yeah, art by Nelson Blake II, who is pretty, if memory serves, is Top Cow. Yeah, Top Cow guy.
It just felt very rudimentary.
It was very clean lined, this felt very, I read this as well too, mainly because David Walker, and I want to see what they do with it. I like a clean style. That is an art style that I look for specifically and enjoy. But this just felt, it lacked dynamic action.
There was nothing dynamic about it. Nothing.
Right? Yeah.
And it was like, there was so little information in it that when, at one point, Luke Cage is in a car and you're driving on a road and there's another car. And I'm like, well, clearly that car is important because there's nothing else in the panel.
Right.
And it's just, it just felt so middle of the road. Like if 0 was Electro and 10 was Sanford Green,
right,
you know, this would be like a 3.
Right, this would be like Rhino. Right. Right, or clearly, or Madam Mask. I mean, one of those too. I mean,
it's
obviously
not bad. It's just
right, yeah. But or maybe maybe a little more Mysterio, maybe. But it could be a little more Mysterio, but not. Anyway, I digress.
Well, Mysterio's more theatrical than this.
No, that's what I'm saying. It could be a little more Mysterio.
It's just not. It's not bad art. It just lacks any kind of personality, any kind of any kind of unique voice. It just feels very middle of the road, and I felt like for a book like Luke Cage
that a lot of eyes are on, and honestly it felt like an adaptation or a like hey, a lot of people are going to be reading about Luke Cage after Netflix, do this and keep and play it straight, play it safe, and I think it just was a little too safe.
It felt like a lot of the motion in this was, and they were filling up a lot of pages that were largely dialogue, but a lot of the motion was just pushing the camera in or out a little bit as opposed to anything else. There's a lot of that, if you look.
It's a lot of waste to headshots.
Luke Cage's facial expression doesn't really change for the first two-thirds of it or so. Like, it kind of looks the same in everything. I can't say it bothered me when I was reading it. I mean, now that you're pointing it out, I can totally see what you're talking about. I thought the voice was a nice midway point between what we really liked about the last... Power Man and Iron Fist, and sort of the TV version that they have to do now.
I like the story. I thought it was well written.
I agree with you, Josh. Yeah, I think the voice was really really good. It's just the art was just very very safe. So.
Who was the villain at the end? Is that a character?
That was the guy. It's the guy they were talking about throughout the issue. The first guy they experimented on before.
Oh right. Okay.
Was he a villain
They were talking about how he went psychotic, and that was the concern about
the called
son.
The Angel of Death. He's blue. I just assumed
he was talked about throughout the issue. But
you're right.
I mean, I'm not thrilled with him moving to New Orleans, but I think David Walker has one of the stronger connections to a character in terms of voice. I mean, it sounds trite to say he's a black writer writing a black character, and he sounds really authentic in that sense. And I think that's really compelling. But I just wish it had a stronger art team on it, because right now it's not really exciting to look at.
I agree.
Which is too bad.
Yep.
But I'm going to continue reading. Yeah, I am, because I think David Walker is really, strong on this character. So at least for a while.
Yeah. But I gotta say, nothing got me more excited than the cover to the Flash number 22.
Which is funny because like the big reveal in the issue is like that Jay Garrick is coming, but then there he is in the cover.
And he did.
Well, he did, but only briefly.
This is my pick of the week, I think.
It was really close to being mine as well, too.
I'd forgotten, like I said. So I like the last minute, I was like, "All right, the button." I was enjoying that, so I made sure to read it just before we got on here. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, and I almost feel like it ended too soon, and I don't really have. I mean, yes, I understand this fades right into the Superman Doomsday, which is the next kind of iteration of it, and that looks to be very intriguing and interesting. It's given us Geoff Johns, it's Gary Frank, like it looks to be good.
Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, Doomsday Clock. I'm sorry, Superman Doomsday Clock. And this is kind of like a prologue to that, and some heavy Watchmen kind of stuff. I mean, this is like a 2-year process to get to this Watchmen story. It better be good.
What's funny is that like they're hinting at Dr. Manhattan, but we're all like, that's Dr. Manhattan.
Like it's him.
Like either that or this is the biggest, jerk off tease ever.
Well, it's not, because the dialogue is straight from Watchmen.
Right, I know. But so, we've just got to wait for it. And the last two pages of that, sort of the epilogue, which is the panel grid and the whole thing. And
I'm going to put on my Batman nerd hat and say the only criticism I had was that Thomas and Martha Wayne are not buried in some random city cemetery. They're buried in the property, Wayne property.
Nerd.
That's the only problem I had. I really like Batman and the Flash together.
Yeah, it's good.
They're both basically cops. I mean, Barry is a cop. He's a CSI, but Batman is basically a cop too. So they have that in common. They analyze evidence. They investigate crimes. They know about fibers and they know about blood spatter. And that's the thing that other Justice Leaguers don't have. So they should be kindred spirits. And it makes total sense that they would be investigating this together. And I think there should be more of that kind of thing happening between the two characters.
The whole thing should be wrong, and I guess I should be mad about it, but I was like, I just kind of want to see what they're going to do with this.
Yeah, exactly. Just like with Secret Empire. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, we said this already at the beginning of the button. Like, yeah, Watchmen, game on, do it. You know what I mean? Like,
if you're
going to
do it, do it. And it seems like they are.
If you're going to do it, do it well. And I think one of the things they're doing is, well, it's funny because, you know, when it's a 6-issue story and it's not very good, we are not, you know, everyone complains about it, rightly so. But here it's a 4-issue story and it's been really good. We're like, oh man, 2 more issues. Come on.
Yeah, no, I want more. Like, honestly, what frustrated me about this issue was the majority of this issue was in the, you know, the time stream. And there was a lot of talking and a lot of going back and forth. I wanted to see a little more, like, see something more happen to it than it just kind of, oh, wrap up. You know, and
so way more than with what you're talking about with Batman was what happened with this for me, because I was like, that's it. Yeah. And then it's in November. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
You got me going. Now, this is the only event that I didn't remember to read it, but that I was excited about.
But Ron, how happy were you when Jay Garrick showed up, even though you knew he was going
to
show up?
It was funny because I was like, are they drawing him to look like John Wesley Shipp?
Maybe.
Like, it was very John Wesley Shipp Jaw-esque or whatever. And I wanted more Jay Garrick. It was like, it was kind of tragic because it's like, all right, great. What's going to happen with Wally's going to happen here. They're going to touch and we're going to get Jay back. We're like, nope.
Yeah, goodbye, but, like, Jay. I was like, oh God, they're going to fix it all.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
Like, we're going to get them back and all the garbage that we've had to deal with is just going to be gone. That's how they're going to get rid of it. Yep. And that's
fine. It's going to happen. They're just teasing us.
Yeah, but
he looks so great in a stupid suit.
I love the fact that this took place in the pages of their books. Easily could have done at least another issue or an issue in each respective book. Like, you could have done more. Anytime with time travel, I love it. I think Flash and Batman are an interesting duo. I like Reverse Flash as the villain. It, like, even with the Watchmen thing, like, you could have had one more, like, drop into a time period or into a multiverse or something like that, and that would have been like, oh my God. But even then, this was great. I thought they nailed this. So good job there, guys.
The button.
The button. Who knew that of all things, the fucking button I'd be raving about? But there you go, the button.
The button.
Well, you, the listener, if you enjoy The Button or any of the other great comics we're talking about and you're enjoying this program, you can help support iFanboy and show your support by doing one of several different things. We've got several options for you that are rolling out. All right, so if you go to iFanboy.com/support, if you do your shopping on Amazon, like many of us do, there's a big banner there and a link to just go shop at Amazon. When you do that, that passes over some information from us to Amazon, and then we get a little cut of your sale, not from you, but from Amazon directly. So if you don't want to spend any money more than what you're spending and you want to help us out, that's the best way to do it. Shop at Amazon via iFanboy.
Well, we should clarify that information is the purchase. Nothing about who is doing the purchasing or information.
Oh, yeah, no. We know nothing about who's buying what. We're getting like a little like a commission.
Whoever's buying all that lube, you're anonymous.
Yeah, we had no idea, and have a great weekend. if you do have money that you want to give us, you want to give it to us directly in a one-time transaction that does not involve Bitcoin, you can go to click on the PayPal link where you can donate to us directly. We thank everyone who does that. You're extremely generous, and we really appreciate it. But the best way to show your support is to become a supporting patron over at patreon.com/iFanboy. And there's also a link to Patreon from our support page on iFanboy.com. And these are the folks who really, really value what we're doing. And we thank you the most. You're our key demographic. But really, in this world of content, where content has been so devalued, the best way to show the support and the love of the content that you do consume is to directly support the creators. And this is a direct way for you to help support us. All of our server costs and bandwidth and all this sort of stuff, it's expensive. And this makes it easy so we don't have to worry about those stuff, so we can just focus on making great podcasts for you. And we've been making so many podcasts, so many that Josh can't even keep up. That's the problem here. And it's all thanks to the supporters at patreon.com/iFanboy. Our t-shirt merch store is like so close to the finish line. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be launched by the time you actually listen to it. So you can keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on us on Twitter and Facebook as well for that announcement. And our next goal, we're inching ever closer. I think we got 11 new patrons this past week, which is awesome. And we thank you guys. You're helping us get closer to our next goal, which we will then unlock another podcast for Josh to not keep track of, where we talk about something not comics related, where we talk about a movie or TV show or book or music or something similar to our year-end media podcast that everybody enjoys at the end of the year, but monthly. So if you want that, the best way to get that is to become a patron. And of course, patrons can participate in several different ways. Every week you can vote for a book for us to talk on the podcast, which we're going to do in a couple of minutes. And every month we have a hangout, a live stream hangout, where you can hang out with us live as we just shoot the shit and talk comics or whatever else we want to talk about for an hour. Our next hangout is going to be on this Monday at 9:30 p.m. So if you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday, it is very soon. If you're listening
May 22nd.
If you're listening to this after May 22nd, you missed it. But you can go to patreon.com and /ifanboy and watch it, because we always keep the archive for patrons. But mark your calendars this Monday, May 22nd, 9:30 p.m.
And it's going to be very interesting, Ron, because you and I could be soaring very high or feeling very low on Monday.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point.
If you know what we're talking about, then you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Josh, it's fine.
So, so go to patreon.com/ifanboy. We thank everybody who's done that. We thank you for your support. Back to the comics.
I'm loath to bring this up because I know how you are, Ron. But Daredevil number 20 was kind of an explainer of everything that happened, and I was kind of okay with it.
I was super not.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
Yep.
I don't need just have him be back and have no one remember his name. I don't need you to explain every step of the way why no one knows Daredevil and why he has a new suit. And also, don't show me the old suit, because now I just think, oh, right, the new suit is not as good as the old suit. I was getting okay with it, and now it's like, oh, the red suit's back.
That's
and
true.
Why, I mean, that was like just a bad strategic move on their part.
Yep. I think that you had what has been a nice 3 or 4 issue story using Purple Man and his children, and that's always fun. And then it was just like, oh, fuck you. You went back to the well and come up with a convenient way to get you back where you were when the series started. You didn't need to explain this. You didn't need to do this. Cop out. So
I think I was just really enjoying the red suit and the Ron Garney art.
Oh, yeah. No, I can enjoy how it looked. Absolutely. Yeah. But it was just a little too convenient. And again, like Connor says, don't explain it. Just something happened. You know what I mean? Like, it was just dumb.
That's what they do, though. I didn't mind it. Like, I recognize it. It's a thing.
Yep.
I like Purple Man stories. They freak me out.
Sure. No, they're great. But I also think that, especially after the Jessica Jones series and after the such great, like, it's a little going back to the welly in order to make, you know, to it's just to come up with something else or whatever. So
talk to me about the Mighty Thor. Are we done with Jane Foster as Thor? It seems to be.
I don't know.
A big thing's happened here.
Yeah. A big X-Men thing.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot. I've dug this all along, but like at the end of this, I was like, oh, there's some couple of really significant moments that took place in here, with Quentin Quire, who isn't fully phoenixed out, but he's
right.
You know, we don't know what he said to him, so that's one of those things that we're gonna have to come back later. You know, and Jane Foster basically, kind of, it seems like she's walking away from it.
Well, she walked away from being on that weird Congress, right?
Yeah.
But I don't get the sense that I got the issue ends with her telling Odinson who she is.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know what the result of that will be. And then the next issue teases the new Ultimate Thor, which isn't, I don't think, Odinson or Jane, you know.
He looks
it's
awesome. From
the Ultimate Universe. It's the Ultimate Universe Thor, right?
No, but it's a different guy. It's because he's got a big bushy beard.
So it's Jason Aaron.
Yeah, it's Jason Aaron. Jason Aaron has now made himself Thor. This is what has happened.
I'd read that.
Yeah, either way, it was interesting.
Yeah, she's on the cover of 21, so I guess she's still doing it, because otherwise she'll die of the cancer.
Yeah.
Those covers that are coming up look great, by the way. It's just like Walt Simonson, you know, tribute, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's great. So
it's great.
I got to say, Eleanor and the Egret number 2 from Aftershock Comics came out. Remember the first issue I raved about? This probably would have been a close runner for my pick of the week. John Layman and Sam Keith writing a quirky Poirot, Agatha Christie style mystery with some weirdness going on. It's fantastic.
I can't imagine or picture Sam Keith writing a Poirot style mystery.
Well, it's John Layman.
I'm sorry, not writing, drawing.
Yeah, no. Well, it's in the great Sam Keith style that we know and love. It's what's amazing with a lot of these characters is that he's really changing the style he's drawing the characters based on their personality as well too. We finally meet the I don't know if it's the villain. It's very unclear who the villain stuff, you know, like, because the main character Eleanor and her Egret have been stealing art, and so clearly they're the ones breaking the law, but they're stealing art from one specific woman. And so I get the sense that she's more the villain, and she brings in this kind of henchman, and he changes the style for each individual character on the page with the other characters. Like, it's just, I mean, Sam Keith, it's such a return to form, and I'm just loving it.
Cool.
Yeah. And then Nick Fury number 2 came out, the second issue, which was my pick. The first issue was my pick of the week. I just want to highlight this because with Akko on art, we get the wonderful pink eye patch, which I'm all for. So.
This seemed weird because it's a Nick Fury Jr. story on the moon. Isn't that where Nick Fury is?
Yes, right.
You know what? So, the more that you ignore that, the better everything is.
Yeah. Well, it just seems odd they wouldn't even mention, you know, like he's on the moon. How often is he on the moon?
Do you think James Robinson knows about that?
It's like when Judd Winnick had the Darkseid kill Connor Hawk and didn't realize that they were gone. I felt like this was kind of diminishing returns from the last issue, which I thought was terrific.
It's more of the same.
I'm gonna give it another one. I'm just not super thrilled with the state of Nick Fury.
It's one of those things where I'm trying to ignore the character and just focus on the art and the layouts and all that, and that's I'm loving. So.
Yeah. Yep. I thought for sure the War on the Moon, they're gonna deal with his dad. Nope.
Nope. Oh no, not at all. No, they're never gonna deal with that at all.
Why? What did Nick Fury do to people?
I have no idea. No idea. So, and lastly, I just wanted to quickly touch on in Star Wars Corner, Star Wars number 31 and Poe Dameron number 15. Both of these things have something in common, which I understand why they're doing and am suspecting why they're doing, but don't necessarily agree with. But my guess is that the Lucasfilm people are insisting on photorealistic artists.
Probably, yeah.
And that's bumming me out.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, it would be one thing if we hadn't seen great artists on this already.
Stuart Eminem.
Yeah, and basically I meant him. But...
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, you have the licensor, and it's... I mean, I don't know if that's the case, but it makes sense that they would.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, the thing is, like, I go back to think how great Eminem was on the book, and then LaRocca can do good things, but like, there's a couple of close ups where it's like this is Greg Land level tracing or of drawing a character, and like Poe Dameron, like everyone looks exactly the way they look. Also, Leia referred to Han as my husband in Poe Dameron, which I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. We never clarified that. We don't know that they got married.
Well, you do now.
Was there a ring?
We don't know that.
Well, then
Han is married to the space. I was going to say the sea, but
they check that stuff. I mean, like that's part of it. Lucasfilm goes through it.
Yeah, maybe. I guess whatever. Anyway,
a question, if in Poe Dameron they drew him to look like
Llewyn Davis, that'd be much better.
So you know what's really
okay with that?
It's God Almighty! It's the Gorfines due back. Oh man, A+, I'm done, I'm going home, good night.
I want to watch that movie so bad right now.
I'm pulling this back. I'm gonna make a point about Salvador LaRocca. If you look through this book, the pages that don't have any of the faces on them are great. That's like when he was on Darth Vader, there weren't so many real faces, and it worked totally fine. So, like, the ones with, like, the guards with the robot heads and the aliens and stuff, that stuff looks great.
He draws great tech. He draws the ships. Yep. Everything's great. Yep.
And then you get to the one where, like, a bunch of Luke Skywalker. It literally looks like a different thing has come in. Like, it's got a different texture to it. It looks like they're trying to do a photo, and it's not all right.
Where is this taking place, this book, Poe Dameron?
In space?
No, I mean, like, at what point in the timeline? Is it a prequel? Is it a sequel to The Force Awakens?
It's... No. It's before Force Awakens. It's before Force Awakens, yep. Because the whole thing was... The whole book started with it was telling how he got the thing to go to Lord Santeca, whatever, Max von Sydow. So, chronologically, it's taking place pre-Force Awakens.
And we're 15 issues into this book.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, why is this still going?
It's probably because it's selling.
Yeah. So, all right, that's it for Star Wars Corners. That means we're going to move on to the patrons' pick. Every week, iFanboy patrons get to vote on a book to make us read and then talk about here on the show. This week, it was neck and neck, right, Connor? Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And actually, before we get into the book, I want to applaud the patrons because I'm really enjoying the little skirmishes that are breaking out in the comments section under the patron picks.
It's amazing. I love it.
There's factions.
Yep.
There's recriminations. Let's see. I'm pulling up a comment here. I want to read it word for word. The Funko voters are called extremists. it really is wonderful. We're enjoying the show. I can't find the quote, but anyway, there's a bit of a schism because there's a movement led by former staffer Jeff Reed to make us read a Funko book.
Listen, let's not give him more attention than he deserves, okay?
And he's gotten people on his side, and each week Funko goes up higher on the list, but the rest of the people are not thrilled with that. So here we go. I urge voters to band behind this book in order to fight the anarchy and unrest to our beloved podcast that would occur if we allow extremists to force them to talk about a Funko book. I mean, that is fantastic. That guy voted for the Royals 3, which did not win. This week, the patron pick was Girl Scouts Magic Socks number 1 by Jim Mahfood. But anyway, keep it up on the comments. That's fantastic. Jim Mahfood is a very strong artistic voice. He has a very strong point of view. It's like the opposite of the art in Luke Cage. He has a very strong vision. It's interesting. Not for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in the first page, there's a little kind of recap or kind of like what you need to know, because it's been more than 10 years since we've had any new Girl Scouts. And at the end of it, it says, blaze one up and enjoy. And I feel like that sums up the entire experience. You know,
I was going to say, I did not blaze one up. So maybe that was why.
Right.
I think his art is great. I actually really like looking at his art. I just didn't like this story. Doesn't really do anything for me. It's just not.
Yeah.
Not my scene.
Josh, what were you saying? Did you enjoy it?
No.
No.
No, I very much didn't. I was
least Josh's scene. It's probably
I'm aware of Jim Mahfood. I have been for a long time. I think the first time I ever came across his work was in like a Clerks comic or Jay and Silent Bob or something a while ago.
Yeah.
He has a place. I don't mind it. It's not for me at all. And then when it's this version, I don't know what I'm reading here or why. And I know that's like, but that's my old man response, but that would have been my response when I was 25. I mean, like, it's just craziness that might be sexy to some, I guess, or not, but.
Well, no, I mean, it's very, I want to say urban, modern, avant-garde in terms of style. It's very graffiti influenced, right? It's very, you know, kind of like Mahfood has lived in LA for a long time. He's in that scene. It's very like I know people that this resonates with. It's not necessarily me, you know, I've enjoyed his work over the years. I think that, you know, Jim Mahfood of 2017 is much different than Jim Mahfood of 1999, you know, and I think we've seen that with all artists and all that sort of stuff. I think that at times this book came off undisciplined, which, you know, either you want to say loose or undisciplined, that's up to you. But I think that there was some stuff where like, I had a hard time telling what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, both from a storytelling standpoint, as well as from a rendering standpoint. You know, I get the sense that this was this is his property. And now it seems like they shot a pilot with Ron Howard, with Imagine. Yeah. What's Ron
Imagine.
Howard? Yeah. Imagine, which is cool and great. And I guess it's on YouTube now. And there's a full page on YouTube. I guess it didn't get picked up or whatever. Great for him. And if he wanted to revisit it because of that, either to capitalize it on it or just have fun with it, that's great. But at the end of the day, I was just like, yeah, this is a bit of a mess. And so
there were two pages there I really liked. I want to say something positive. So there's a one page shot of Rita painting in her apartment. It's a full page spread after the craziness in the club where it opens the scene. And there's no dialogue. It's just a quiet scene of her painting. She's sort of curled up in a ball. I really like this page a lot. It's got great detail. It has great emotion to it. I could really feel the room. Again, this is like the opposite of Luke Cage in every single way. But I found myself looking at that page for quite a long time. Maybe it's because I grew up. My mom was a painter, so the idea of jars of paintbrushes everywhere feels very safe to me. Like I feel like I'm home again because that was how I grew up.
And I feel like I'm visiting Connor's house, which is always nice for me too.
Yeah, so I like that page a lot. I also really liked the little cartoon he did at the end explaining what this all about was about.
That was my favorite part.
I found that much better than the actual comic. What is this whole Girl Scout situation about anyway, by Jim Mahfood? I thought that was terrific. That was really terrific.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, the main book didn't do anything for me. I didn't know anything about a character. I mean, it was a follow-up.
Maybe you had to have read the original series.
I mean, it's a follow-up.
And I read the original series, but years ago. So I don't know. I mean, like, it was a tough pill to swallow, I thought. Yeah.
So I really liked looking at it. It was interesting, but
All right. So ratings. Connor was.
It's tough. I'm gonna give it a 3 for the artistic daringness of it.
Josh.
2.25 stars.
All right, 2.25. I'm giving it a 2.5. Sticking with it?
No.
No.
No. I barely made it through the 1.
All right.
All right, well, so that was Patreon pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how you can do that. And everyone who is a Patreon can vote or patron. God damn it. They got to.
You're not. Everybody does it.
Everyone who's a patron can vote on the pick every week. But if you give it a certain level, I believe it's the $5 level over at patreon.com/iFanboy, you get your very own dumb superpower. We're going down the list. If you're a new patron, you're going to have to wait a while because we've got over 400 of them. So
we're getting there. We're doing 4 an episode.
Do the math. It's 100
Do the math.
Everybody
we understand everybody wants their patron power, but we're doing them in order of signing up. So we'll get to you. Just be patient.
Well, Josh, kick it off.
We're going to start off with Mark Bennett, who I am enunciating perfectly. Mark Bennett can pay attention to 7 things at once. Nice. 7 things.
Once again, a patron power that is in the general vicinity of your life.
I mean, I don't know where else to grab them from at this point. I guess I could open up National Geographic. And when I start running out of things like that, it's fine. That was, of course, a last-minute change.
Okay.
Over
you do have 2 this week, so yeah. So there
is
you
it
go.
Can he pay attention to fewer than 7, or up to 7, or exactly 7? Like, is it a curse? He's constantly paying attention to 7 things.
More. 8, it falls apart. But you know, like he could have, like if you have those old time, like you know, the wall of monitors.
Right. Yeah.
7, he's good.
But the 8th one is just too much.
No, it all falls apart at 8. It's just
it falls apart. So you can distract him with an 8th thing, and that's his weakness. It's like yellow with the green lantern.
I guess, but you know, I don't know if this is a supervillain type of situation. I don't know if he has that.
Okay.
Does he have 7 TVs in his living room?
No, not necessarily. You don't always want to be operating at your max.
Right. Well, yeah, you want to relax really, a little. Yeah.
He could be really efficient in his TV watching though.
True.
I like how then you turned what I was saying into a thing that would appropriate for you.
Yeah, that was really well done.
I've been out of town for like 4 weeks. I got my DVR is gas.
I'm getting started on that. Iron Fist. All right, up next, I want to thank Brian Herhold for being a patron. And Brian's power is it's a really interesting, unique thing in that he is the literal definition or multiple definitions of fencing. So what that means is that he can either sword fight very well, he can also sell stolen goods without getting caught, and he is able to build a fence around a house like nobody's business.
So you're doing homonym-based powers now.
Yeah, no, but that's the weird thing, is that his powers are based on fencing. But fencing has got multiple definitions, and he can do them all.
Tell you, those are... Wait, just a clarification. Fencing is only stolen goods?
Yes.
You can't legally fence goods.
No.
That's just selling.
Yeah, that's just reselling.
and you're going to need to be a vendor for that. You got to fill out all the paperwork and all that
stuff. Number, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, because you don't want to have to pay sales tax twice.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got furs in the back. He's got nice dresses, some real nice dresses.
And listen, and they're all protected by a really high fence that he built himself with ease. So, yeah.
Pinball machines.
But shrimps and lobsters are the best.
Yeah, so. But the thing is, like, his dresses, they're down there. They're just down there.
Just down there, past the fence.
Just down there. Just make a right.
Oh, wait. No. That's my fencing gear. Put my foil down. No. That's the dresses are past the fencing gear. And then he goes, on God.
Michael Frivoletti His power is bedazzling.
Bedazzling what?
Anything. Everything. He just touches things and it's bedazzled.
All right. Well, then.
You want jeans bedazzled? He's got you. You got a jean jacket. And he basically, it's not even just denim. He can do it all.
All right. Cool. It, like with the sparkly, with the little, like the rhinestones and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. He can make every outfit fabulous.
You're fabulous.
Depending on the time of the year and the place you are.
Sure. Yeah. There's times when bedazzling is not appropriate, but it's not less fabulous for that reason.
Unless you're on the South Shore of Long Island, then it's always superb.
Hey! Hey!
You know how I feel about that. Anyway, go on.
Scott Carelli has the power... I think I might be the only one who laughs at this. Of a series of tubes. He can manipulate PVC piping to build like wondrous and amazing things.
Oh, cool.
He controls a series of tubes.
Does he need the PVC piping to manipulate, or can he generate PVC piping?
No, he has to carry around a trailer full of PVC piping.
That's the thing,
piping.
Is that you've got to go to Home Depot and get a lot of piping.
Yeah.
But once you've got it, he just let him loose and he'll do it.
Oh, yeah. No, he has an extended bed pickup truck that he uses to carry the piping around.
Is it only PVC piping, or can it be like metal tubing?
No,
or
PVC piping. The plastic sort of white.
Yeah, I know.
And, sure he gets to use the elbows, the joints, the bends, all of those things.
All right.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Like you wouldn't believe. I love it.
So thank you, Mark, Brian, Michael, and Scott for being patrons. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and that is where you can join up at a $5 level or above. You get your own superpower every week. So let's do at least one email here. Josh, which one should we do?
Well, I can't read the first one. It's not from me.
The second one I was just going to yell angrily at.
Let's do Ron. Ron, one of the things, Ron, not Ron Richards, Ron says, one of the things that has always bugged me is the anti-life equation. It's basically the MacGuffin for every story involving the new gods or dark side. But what the heck is it? An equation is a mathematical formula, but that doesn't seem to be the case here. Wouldn't anti-life be an awkward synonym for death? It's always depicted as some kind of ray or light or force. So how is that an equation? I've thought about this ever since Kirby created the new gods, and I think Final Crisis muddied the waters even more. What say you?
So the anti-life equation, according to Wikipedia, is a formula for total control over the minds of sentient beings that is sought by Darkseid, who for this reason sends his forces to Earth as he believes part of the equation exists in the subconscious.
If you use life as a synonym... No, he's constantly searching for it.
Yeah, he's trying to find it. So the
life
equation,
is a synonym for free will, basically, here.
Yeah. The common interpretation is that the equation is a mathematical proof for the futility of living.
Yeah, it's about free will versus control. I mean, it's
like the equation for the futility of the living is just life. Like that's yesterday.
Jeez, I'm gonna say I didn't say that.
That got dark.
I know, which is funny.
It also is just the MacGuffin, yes, but that's also what it is. Yeah.
Do you need to understand advanced math to have it work?
We don't know. We've never seen it.
What's the thing you don't know about Darkseid is that he actually...
Darkseid!
No, the thing you don't know about him is that he's Darkseid.
He's Darkseid. The thing about Darkseid is that he actually went to college for math. He was like a high-level, like Goodwill Hunting style mathematician.
Yeah. So.
How do you like those apples?
Wait a second. That's a
That got me. That was good.
It's not your fault, Darkseid.
I mean, I always looked at it as the equivalent of the Infinity Gauntlet in Marvel. You know?
I like that it's big and crazy and stupid.
Yeah.
That's the bigger the better, the crazier for the new gods in my opinion. But yeah, it's basically an equation that controls everyone. That's what it is.
Yeah.
If life is flourishing and freedom and free will, the anti-life equation gives Darkseid control over that.
Yeah. I want to do the next question because I want to hear Josh yell. Frank from Arizona writes in and is just baiting Josh. I've been thinking about this question ever since I found out that the Vertigo universe was being folded into the New 52 around 2011, and have redoubled my efforts upon hearing Dr. Manhattan was on his way as well. My question is this: how would you bring in Jesse Custer to the DC universe proper? You have a chance to pitch editorial with your own idea and suggest a writer-artist team. And for extra incentive...
Ha 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 ha
that the sound of Josh banging his head on the table?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. So.
Finish the email. Finish it.
So how do you introduce him? Do you bring in the whole Preacher universe or just team him up with Batmite and call it a day? Thanks, Frank from Phoenix. So Josh, I'm Dan DiDio. Pitch me your Preacher idea.
Go screw. I read that email when it came in. I was like, oh, I hope Josh doesn't see this.
It's funny really because like I want to harken back to a plot line of the movie Heathers, where there's a song in the background, Teenage Suicide, Don't Do It, which is great advice for this. Don't do it. Never do it. Just leave it alone. Right, Josh?
I like that he used redoubled my efforts. I enjoyed that part.
Yeah, I would refuse were I in that position.
And then I would
the Preacher universe in DC. I would say no, thank you.
I would refuse and then flip the table over, kick the garbage can on your way out, and just knock the bookcase over and then leave.
I'd just be Paul Rudd from Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, gosh. All right. Great question. Keep them coming. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You get your question on the show. Be sure to include your name, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about this question in order to get on the show. Also, if you'd like to send an audio file, you can always send an MP3 or something. And if it's good, we'll play it. Keep those short. Keep them under a minute, please. Just like our buddy from Florida from a couple episodes ago, Rashad. He was great. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's show. Now, listen, before we plug the other shows and all the other stuff, we've been kind of tiptoeing around the elephant in the room, gentlemen. I know you're listening, Connor, and I know that hundreds and thousands of you are also listening because my Twitter feed is now useless.
About 24 hours into last week's show, Ron was like, why did we do this Frasier thing? He was so pissed.
So if you remember last week, Connor asked everyone that if you were listening to post a picture of Dr. Frasier Crane on social media and let us know that you're still listening. So now so great. We did that. That was fun. Great response. I got a bone to pick with some of you. Right? You really need to pay attention to detail. I know the desire to be clever on social media is strong. Just ask Josh. But we didn't say post a picture of
Kelsey
Beast
Grammer
or Sideshow Bob or any other character that Kelsey Grammer plays. We said Frasier Crane. Am I correct, Connor?
That's correct. And everyone, I think if we were, you know, in charge of the world, all those people would be out.
Up against the wall.
Up against the wall.
Jesus, I was just going to say off Twitter, but okay.
The wall.
So listen, next time we pull one of these stunts, you all got to pay attention to details. If you're going to flood my Twitter feed, at least make it accurate. That said, the one guy who posted the screenshot of the cover of his book that he's writing about the show Frasier, you get bonus points. That was good. That was well done. So fun times, everyone. So we can stop it now. We can stop it.
Or unless you want to continue to torment Ron, you can post a picture directly to him and say, I'm still listening.
I literally just got one like an hour ago. Like, it's ridiculous. Just stop.
We got a couple of minutes of show left, and there's lots of things out there. So let's tread lightly, gentlemen.
Okay, so we got more podcasts. Go to ifanboy.com. You can listen to the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 podcast and then come to the website and tell us why you think we're wrong, which is fine because we all have opinions. Believe it or not, a podcast about Iron Fist is coming. I have made progress, finally. And so we'll be recording that hopefully this month and getting it out to you. And then, of course, the next superhero movie, Wonder Woman, is coming in early June, and we're going to turn around a show pretty quickly about that one. So stay tuned for more movie and TV podcasts.
Yeah, there's going to be one major one a month the next 3 months. You got Wonder Woman, and then July is Spider-Man, and then August is we back for the Defenders, which will be – hopefully we'll get Iron Fist out before the Defenders.
Well, the great thing about the Defenders is that it's 5 episodes shorter because they finally took our advice. Oh, I forgot to mention in the freaking Luke Cage book, in the Luke Cage number one, did we really need a staircase hallway fight, by the way, too, in the book?
Shh.
Anyway, carry on.
Also, just a note, our 600th episode will be in September, so...
That's something to look forward to.
That's usually when we do a live drunk show. Anyway, In addition to the movie and TV shows, we also have this week we released our Booksplode on Roughneck, the new Jeff Lemire OGN, which is brought to you by the patrons. That means next month you'll be looking forward to a Talksplode, our interview show. And next week, you can, or this week, if you're listening to the show later, we'll have our Teen Titans, the Judas Contract show. The Animation Brain Trust got together. We recorded it. It's done. It'll be coming out to you a few days after this one comes out.
Of course, if you're listening to this on Sunday or even on Monday, you can still, and you are an iFanboy patron, you can, of course, come to the patron hangout that we have scheduled for Monday, May 22nd at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And those, the last one was a lot of fun. I don't guarantee that this one will be fun, but we usually have fun.
Yeah, we'll have a good time.
What was the last one? Oh, the last one was about the comic industry. That's right.
Yeah.
What are we talking about this time around?
Honestly, it's going to depend how Sunday night goes.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, it's going to be that on Sunday. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, do
it's
I have to show
be,
up?
It's going to be, if you want to, there's a 50-50 chance, Josh, that we're crying in misery. So maybe you want to watch that revel in it. Because not only... I should mention this as we're plugging. Not only is a 50-50 chance of us crying in misery, but then I'm committed to do a podcast about that misery for the next 18 weeks.
Yeah, so Ron's Damn Fine Podcast about Twin Peaks. You should mention if you're listening to this Sunday and you become a Damn Fine Podcast patron, you can watch Ron and I on a live stream on Sunday before Twin Peaks debuts. Very anxious. I'll just put it that way. We're going to be very anxious talking about Twin Peaks, the third season, and then third season, Rapierce in the Night, and then and it just goes all from there.
Yeah. And that's also the thing that's to note, too, that if you are indeed watching Twin Peaks on Showtime Sunday nights, please do check out Damn Fine Podcast at damnfinepodcast.com, where we will be releasing an episode about every episode for the next 18 episodes. And Connor will be on there a lot as well, too, as we try to make sense of David Lynch for the summer. It should be a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
So,
while you
lost some for Defenders, you gained them in Twin Peaks.
Yeah. So there you go.
Honestly, Twin Peaks is half the reason why half these shows are so late.
Yeah. I wouldn't say half. It's 25-30%. There's some other stuff going on, but still. All right. So all that said, go over to ifanboy.com where you can find all those other podcasts we talked about, everything else. You can follow us on social media on facebook.com/ifanboy and follow us at Twitter @ifanboy. And you can find us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at Ron XO, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to find out what the pick is before the show comes out, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. That's where you can find out about it. And also, we post the patron pick as well as the pick on patreon.com/ifanboy for patrons as well, too. So there you go.
And if you like the show, please write a review on iTunes. It's better yet is to tell your friends who like comics but don't listen to the show, tell them to listen. It's fun. We talk about weird things and get anxious about Twin Peaks. All these things are enjoyable for people who like to read comics, I assume.
We assume. So until next time, it's so hot, and that's why we're wacky. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I can't think of a gift this week, so I guess we'll have to wait for next week.
My spirit gets all downhearted sometimes. Where are the strong? Who are the trusted? Where is the harmony? Sweet harmony. Yeah. Each time I feel like this inside, it just makes me want to say, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?